strolling the halls and exhibits of Folk Alliance, anger and frustration seem like the farthest thing from anybody's mind. There's a klezmer brass band in the lobby. Strangers gather around a piano for an impromptu jam session. Yet the upheaval of American politics, epitomized by the shock election of Donald Trump, hovered nearby on the occasional TV screen or in the news flood on Twitter. While there's no generalizing about the incredibly diverse music in today's folk scene, it's safe to say that by and large, the folk music crowd ranges from left of center to militantly socialist. Many were talking about their disdain for the nationalism, xenophobia, and sexism displayed by the new president, but how to write and sing about it? The first person I stopped to ask about what's trending is well-known folk DJ Art Menias.
My show is The Revolution Starts Now, the topical song show on WCOM in Carver, North Carolina, WCOMFM.org. Every Tuesday, I play topical, political, and historical songs. And when I started the show, I was so much relying on the classics of Woody Guthrie, Almanac Singers, Pete Seeger, 60 stuff, Peter, Paul, and Mary. But in the last year especially, I'm overwhelmed with material. And with the digital age, people are writing protest and topical songs the day of. I got a Bowling Green Massacre song in that afternoon. So I play sometimes as many as three songs in a show that are less than a week old.
What are some of the themes that emerge? And is there a sense of, like, artists who are so overwhelmed by negative signals that they want to address that it's actually kind of paralyzing?
Well, I don't know if it's paralyzing, but it's all over the map. I get everything from the let's all work together, we're one people, to the let's impeach the president.
An artist taking the first of those two paths is Nashville songwriter Corby Lenker, who this week had a freshly minted song that he co-wrote with Nora Jane Struthers premiere in video form at NPR's World Cafe website.
I feel like the debate, if I could characterize it, has been a lot of talking at. Facebook posts are talking at. That was kind of where my heart was when I sat down with Nora Jane. And so we were like, what can we say that might actually be helpful in something that might create an actual conversation? And we're like, you know what would be cool is if people would just sit down together. And we don't even have to talk. We can talk about football, but we'll have a meal together. And you remember that, like, oh, the person who thinks differently than you is a person. And so that was the impetus for this song that we wrote called Let's Just Have Supper.
Sunday afternoons, I see my neighbor John cutting grass and washing cars. He's always working hard. When we pass, we wave. Seems like an all right guy. I kind of thought we might be friends until I saw that sign up in his yard. I guess we don't agree, let's just have supper. Here, pull up a chair. It's hard to feel so far away, sitting with you here. Cornbread's in the oven, chicken's on the stove. Let's just have supper before the beans get cold.
Anyway, I just felt like this song was true to what I feel like I'm trying to do in my music in general, which is just to, like, music is really, something about music is that it is a thing that brings people together. And I think this song kind of does that. I feel like my strategy isn't the strategy. You know what I mean? It's just like what I feel like I can do, and it's true to me. But yeah, there's obviously like tons of upset artists and scared artists, you know, like wondering what's going to happen.
Singer-songwriter Megan Jean is more inclined to tackle controversies head-on, but not without a keen sense of wanting to be effective by reaching audiences that aren't predisposed to agree with her. She and her husband, Byrne Cly, tour as Megan Jean and the Cly Family Band out of Charleston, South Carolina. She's been writing and singing protest songs all her life, she says, and for obvious reasons, she's more motivated than ever. That said, she's been honing an approach that's tuned to the times.
And so we're always trying to go for that sort of universal human message that sort of transcends literal speak. which I think is key, because you turn so many people off. As much as I love Woody Guthrie, so hard to get up in a dive bar in Augusta, Georgia, and go, "Oh, you fascists bound to lose," and they're sitting in front of you. These are the fascists. You know, you have to find a more tactful and egalitarian way to say these things. You have to make people entertain. It's like Joan Baez said on Birmingham Sunday, "I'll sing so softly that you won't get upset." You know, it's going to be so beautiful, this message that I'm about. So that's what we try to do. We try to code it in a way that gets people thinking and going, "What am I hearing right now?" But not in a way where they feel like they're being preached at, because I don't like being preached at.
Megan Jean's partner, Byrne, says where they sing is as important as what they sing.
You got to get in front of people. You got to get in front, physically, get in front of people and challenge the people that way, even whether it's gently or whatever's appropriate to the situation. But you got to go and get in front of people. Donald Trump won the election because he went to places where people felt that they weren't being heard. He just went there and said, "I hear you, here you go." And, you know, when Megan and I started touring 10 years ago, that's exactly how we built our career. We played in bars and wherever that were a little out of the way, but people are like, "Oh, nothing comes here." And music's an amazing olive branch. If people like what you're doing, if they like the way you sing, it really doesn't matter how. I mean, you got to have pretty extreme views for them to write you off that quickly.
Back to Megan Jean again. She believes in bolstering the band's outreach with a tool that was not even a dream of the 1960s folk movement.
If you find now as an artist, it's in your music, and it's also on your social media presence as well. Because you have to interact with your fans online, and I find that that's where the real work is done. I've been talking to one specific gal that voted for Trump that is a lesbian and a former service person, and we've been having quite a dialogue. And I have dedicated the time, and she's asked me, "Am I the only Trumper you know?" And I said, "No, but I think that you're going to get it. I really do. I really think that you're going to..." But then what an advocate to go into her community that thinks the same exact way as her. And then spread these messages. This is because she came to one of my shows in a dive bar, because we're nobody's from nowhere, like happily and proudly, and we're not a big deal, and we have a big audience, but it's like we're not a commercial success. But it started with this dialogue in a bar over music that had nothing to do with these political issues, and now look, we're talking and having engagement online, you know, and bringing that into our real lives.
Folk Alliance as an organization now seems prescient in having set its activism and art theme well in advance of Trump's nomination.
Well, it was eerily timed, but regardless of the results of the past year, I think it amplified our theme.
That's Folk Alliance's executive director, Angus Finnan.
All of the ways that folk music was at the forefront in the civil rights movement and in, you know, the pacifist movement and many movements in sort of the iconic days of folk music, where the folk singer was on the front of the picket line and, you know, at those demonstrations. All of those issues are still real. And whether it's racial injustice or, you know, economic disparity or issues of refugees or the environment, I mean, the issues may have fluctuated a bit, or the specifics changed or deepened, but they're all the same issues that were the issues of the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. So the theme was really a call to action for our community to reflect on the role of folk music and the power and potential of the artist to take that time on stage to really share what they think, and to not worry that by being expressive of their concerns or their values that they're going to ostracize themselves from an audience.
That said, the artist also has an obligation to, in essence, read the room, to develop strategies for being received and heard. As Billy Bragg, Folk Alliance keynote speaker, put it this weekend in a panel on music, politics, and activism, he regularly advises young artists to be aware of the problem of, quote, "too much protest, not enough song." Again, Angus Finnan.
There is a time to be against something in a way that expresses the disbelief or the outrage or the upset of a people, and then there's a point where that collaborative grassroots community level collective buy-in is required, and where finding ways to have conversation and to be bipartisan in some instances, but just broader in thinking, so that everyone is involved in the conversation. Presenting something in a way that just makes the other side defensive or push back inevitably results in an us and them kind of approach. And I think the nature of folk music is such that it's about storytelling and about capturing ideas in a way that, when well crafted, allows everyone to look at it from perhaps a different perspective than their own.
Nashville songwriters represent a microcosm of the Folk Alliance artist army, with a number of projects and protests taking shape. Fiddler Rachel Bayman, half of Folk Alliance showcase band 10 String Symphony, has organized Folk Fights Back shows at the Family Wash, raising money for progressive causes. And Doug Williams, who performed at Folk Alliance with his wife Talisha as the country roots duo Wild Ponies, is wrapping up production of a multi-artist compilation called Songs of Love and Protest, Strange Freedom. Here's Doug Williams.
You know, there's a sense of helplessness that kind of washes over you when this happened. We were all just surprised, and we wanted to do something. And so Talisha and I contacted him, and we started working on this record, feeling like there's, you know, you can't just sit back and let it happen. And I think everybody kind of felt the same way. They wanted to contribute.
What about the range of messages and approaches that these artists took to what they had to say?
It's pretty wide. Amy Spies and Whit Hill wrote this amazing song that's kind of trying to reach out to their neighbors and kind of say, you know, where do we go from here is their song, and how do we connect with each other? And then we've got a song by Steve Poltz called God, I'll Trade You, Donald Trump for Leonard Cohen, you know, which is a little more in your face. And Tim Easton wrote one that's a little more in your face. So it's a wide range of kind of like trying to reach out and find some common ground and figure out, you know, what went wrong, and all the way to, you know, just your standard fist in the air protest song of the 60s.
Doug and Talisha Williams came to Nashville from rural Martinsville, Virginia, so they're not out of touch coastal elites, progressive though they may be. Doug says as long as they've been writing, some of their material has come out political, but in an understated way.
Our song 20.2, which was several records ago, is a story about the unemployment rate in our small town. And we've always found that the more honest and the truer you can be, the more specific and detailed, the deeper you go into reality and the things that are happening around you, the more universal, oddly enough, the songs and the themes become. And more people can identify with them and connect with them on a different level. So we've always tried to do that and just be as honest in our songwriting as we can. And it definitely has, all of our songs have always had a point of view. But we, you know, we have Republican fans, and we have people who know our politics well, but they still, you know, they can connect to our music and connect to us as people.
Let's close with the song the Wild Ponies themselves contributed to the Songs of Love and Protest collection. It's a little bit of both, a song written some time ago with a renewed relevance.
Well, about 2 years ago, actually, oddly enough, we wrote a song for this guy who was at the time just your average everyday governor of Indiana. We had no idea what was going to happen to him, but he had just passed the Religious Freedom Bill in the state of Indiana, and we wrote a song for him called Love Is Not a Sin. And we just kind of described the qualities of love, and then it's kind of a pro-equality song. So we're putting that on the record, and hope Mike Pence hears it and likes it. We'd love for him we'd love to hear his take on it.
For WMOT, I'm Craig Havokhurst.
I know love is not a sin. No, love is not a sin. From the time that I was put here till he calls me home again, I know love is not a sin. I know it makes the world go. When you're knocked down to the ground, that's what makes the world go round. I know love, it doesn't see. I know love, it doesn't see. Doesn't see the things that make any different from me. I know love, it doesn't see. I doesn't matter who you love. When lovers find each other, I'd say it's sanctioned from above.